adding a new member to the family can be a joyous thing. Babies are fun, cuddly little bundles of hope for the future, but they're also not cheap. On this edition of Techonomics, host Jason Middleton looks at a new survey that has one cost expectation for how much new parents spend in the first year of a baby's life, while the government has a completely different number. So why the disparity when estimating the cost of raising a child? Techonomics starts now on KGO 810.
Hey, thanks for checking us out. First up this segment, we will look at the cost of keeping that baby alive for its first year on Earth. We will also look at the severely flawed rollback of internet privacy that happened. That particular hot mess is a bipartisan backlash that will be an election issue next year. So stay tuned for that. But first, putting a price on things like raising a child can be problematic. Too many variables. That said, having at least an accurate estimate helps parents budget for that growing family. And if those estimates have too wide of a range, well, they're practically useless, aren't they? A recent release from the U.S. Department of Agriculture finds that the cost of raising a newborn through the first year of life for middle-income parents is $12,680. But that may not be the half of it, literally.
My name is Klaus Bell, and I'm a data analyst with Bankrate.com.
When I got the pitch for this story about the cost of raising a child for the first year, and I looked at the number, and I was like, that can't be right. But Klaus's research is always right. So what what did you find out?
So, you know, the USDA just recently put out a number about what they think the cost of raising a child is. But we want to take that question to Americans and see what they think the cost is. So we did a national poll where we asked people to estimate what they think the cost of raising a child through age one is. And the number they came up with was just over $24,000, actually, $24,131, okay, which is almost double the USDA number.
The USDA normalizes for almost nothing, right? It's just a big round number?
What the USDA does is they go into the Consumer Expenditure Survey, which is, you know, this record of tens of thousands of interviews that the Bureau of Labor Statistics does. And they go and they find people, families that have children, and then they ask those people, you know, they look at what people said about their expenses, and they use all those numbers to come up with what the cost is based on what parents typically spend. This poll that we did was we just asked people what they think it costs.
I see.
We just kind of got a totally different number, and honestly, it was much higher than I expected.
Yeah, no kidding. And it ranged a little bit by the respondents' age. So you asked the question to 18, 25-year-olds, you got a different number than you did when you ask a 55-year-old person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of there's kind of two ways to read that big difference. You know, you can say that maybe there's just lots of Americans who don't really have a close connection to what it costs right now to raise a child. So you saw young millennials age 18 to 25. They had one of the highest average guesses at $31,000. And so did silent generation folks over age 71. They had actually the highest estimate overall. So, you know, these are folks that may just not have a lot of direct experience with the cost of raising a child, you know, in 2016, 2017.
Right. Any other takeaways from this one? Because I think this is probably an important number if you're expecting or if you're planning to expect a family, right? Or planning to expect a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, what we want people to do is really start drilling down into the numbers if they're considering having a family, you know, starting a family soon. We want people to really be thinking about what those costs are going to be, where they live, you know, with their lifestyle, et cetera. It's interesting because, you know, I said that there were kind of two ways to look at that big gap. You can say that, you know, maybe Americans aren't really connected to the cost of raising a child, or you could say that Americans are taking a broader view than the USDA. I mean, there was really two big pieces that the USDA left out. They left out paying for college, which, you know, because they say we're only going up to age 18, so after that, you know, it's someone else's problem.
Right.
But parents will say, you know, if you want to make college happen, in a lot of cases, you have to start saving way ahead of time, and so you're going to have to budget for that. And, you know, the other big thing that the USDA doesn't count but is a huge issue for parents is lost wages. It's a very small percentage of U.S. companies that offer any kind of paid parental leave, and then you have people, you know, taking time out of their careers to raise children, potentially taking a couple of years, and then having to deal with a hole in the resume and some other issues. So, you know, over the course of a parent's lifetime, if they take time off to raise that child, it can cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars in lost income. So that's a big issue. I think Americans are very well connected to that. You know, thinking about, you know, there's so many two working parent households now. And so it's just a major concern for people. So, like I said, you can read it, you know, however you want to. You can say, well, you know, maybe Americans are kind of clueless about the cost of raising a child, or maybe, you know, they know a little bit better than, you know, maybe some of the government figures. But yeah, you know, our point here was to get people thinking about what the cost of that first year is, so that, you know, people don't go to take the newborn down to the car and put them in the car seat for the first time and then start, you know, thinking to themselves, wow, I mean, how am I going to pay for all this? So
right.
That's really what we want people to avoid.
Right. Well, we appreciate the context. I mean, and I'm glad you included all the anecdotals there and the real life application of this number that you guys have fleshed out. That's why we always have you on, Klaus. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
That was Klaus Bell. He's a senior analyst at Bankrate.com. His recent survey of Americans puts the cost of raising a baby for the first year of its life at $24,000 and change. You can check out a link to his full report at KGORadio.com/techonomics. To wrap up this segment, let's talk about your internet provider, and your rights. The House and the Senate have voted to allow companies like Verizon, AT&T, Time Warner, and others to sell your internet history without your permission. The would-be law rolls back Obama administration privacy protections. President Trump is likely to sign this into law. Here's a good and brief CNN summary.
Would have required internet service providers to get permission before collecting and sharing your personal data, such as web browsing history, app usage, and geolocation. There's big money in using your information. Providers would also have to notify customers about the data they collect. The goal was to give consumers extra control over their personal data online at a time when everything from smartphones to refrigerators can be connected to the internet. Lawmakers who back the repeal say it's a duplicate regulation. Getting rid of it will increase competition, they say, among internet companies and cut the costs for those big companies. Democrats and privacy advocates argue the move effectively hands over your personal information to the highest bidder.
Okay, a few things to unpack here. First, who really cares if this privacy violation helps multinational companies cut costs? Whatever. Second, this is a privacy violation. That's your data. You are the creator of that content. You pay to use their pipes. And that CNN anchor is right. That's big money. In several think pieces and on this very show last year, the co-founder of Wired Magazine, Kevin Kelly, proposed that in the age of big data and data marketing, it is best if people monetize their online behaviors for themselves. So not only is this law simply a violation of privacy, it's robbing you of the chance to make money for yourself. Kevin Kelly believes we should all keep our data and take out the middleman, the ISPs like Verizon and AT&T. So if this GOP fever dream becomes law, we are paying them not only for access to the internet, a standard transaction, agreed, but we're also paying them to take more of our money by denying us our own data. Now, that's more like extortion. Here's Kevin Kelly, the Wired Magazine co-founder I mentioned, talking about rather than having surveillance, how about covalence, where we have some control over our own data and how it's used.
I think the tracking is not going to go away. I think we can't stop it, but I think we can civilize it. I think we can actually make it more civil, more domesticated, more comfortable by having covalence. By covalence, I mean that I would like to have a symmetry so that I know who's tracking me and I can track them. I know what they know about me. I can correct it. I can hold them accountable and I get direct benefit. That's not true right now. They know about me. I don't know who they are. I don't have any recourse to correct it. I don't get any direct benefits from it, and it could be completely wrong. And so if we can introduce a kind of a covalence, a symmetry to it, I think it becomes a little bit more tolerable. And the other thing about that is that I think there's a kind of a binding between two different sets of characteristics. There's the scale of very, very private and very, very transparent, which happens to be completely correlated to the generic and personalized. So if I want to be treated as an individual, if I want people to treat me as an individual, to personalize like a friend, I have to be open and transparent to them. That's the only way I can be treated as an individual, as who I am. I have to be transparent. If I choose to be private and hide myself and my preferences or anything that I know about me, then I'm going to be treated generically. I think we should have that slider and some choice in that. But here is the surprise, is that when we have that choice, most people are pushing the slider to the personalized and transparent. And I sum that up as saying that vanity trumps privacy. That's been a surprise. Who knew? But I think that's where we're going. I do think we should have that slider to control, but the surprise is that most of us are pushing it in that direction. Anything that can be tracked will be tracked.
Now, to clarify, Kevin at the end there is talking mostly about our social networks, how much we share on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. Most users are choosing to opt for more vanity than privacy on those platforms. This anti-privacy law removes our option. You have no control of Facebook, Google search words, Pinterest activity. That's theirs now. And what's more, the new law has no takebacks. These corporations will not have to relinquish their control of your data. Well, maybe, you know, until we get a new Congress. If you're not into giving up your data for corporations to make free money, we have a solution. At Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio, there's a link that will help you set up a virtual privacy network in 10 minutes for free. Virtual, because you're not creating a new physical connection with your destination. Your data is just traveling through existing wires between you and your destination. And private, because it encrypts your activity before sending it, then decrypts it at the destination. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, my name is Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Thank you for listening, and have great weeks, everybody.